Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And I see your true colors shining through. I see your true colors. And that's why I love you. So don't be afraid to let them show your true colors.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Former Genesis frontman and solo artist Phil Collins recently announced that he's walking away from the music biz. His career has been polarizing, to say the least. For a guy who has sold more than 100 million records worldwide, there are a lot of people who seem very happy to see the back of him. So, this 8-time Grammy Award winner's retirement has us wondering what to say next. Goodbye or good riddance? It's a question for this week's
Soundcheck Smackdown!
And joining me in the studio is music writer and author Andy Greenwald. And joining us by phone is Entertainment Weekly editor-at-large Ken Tucker. Andy, Ken, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you. I am doing fingertip push-ups even as we speak.
Now, why are you doing that, Ken?
Just to get in shape, to do some
serious smacking.
Yes. Why?
This guy has Grammy Awards. He even has an Academy Award. Andy, 100 million record buyers. Can they all be wrong?
Probably not all of them. No, I would say, perhaps a percentage.
But why is he so polarizing then?
Well, the thing about Phil Collins is that he was completely dominant in the 1980s in a way that was completely inescapable. Not to give my opponent some ammunition, but Bret Easton Ellis wrote the most incredible smackdown of Phil Collins' career in himself in American Psycho, when he just wrote this page after page rapturous account of Phil Collins' career that was really just this incredible indictment, blaming Phil Collins, basically representing him as everything mm-hmm. that was terrible about the 1980s.
But you're not buying that. You're a fan.
I am a fan, yeah. I was going to make the argument that I think that people who perhaps grew up in the 70s might see Phil Collins as a betrayal of everything that perhaps the 60s or 70s stood for, as a complete, vanilla mainstreaming of everything. But for someone like myself who grew up in the 80s, he was completely approachable and appealing as an entry into music. Here was a guy who was on the radio constantly, on MTV constantly, who seemed to be having a good time. He wasn't about cool. He wasn't about a pose. He seemed to be enjoying himself and putting his emotions front and center, and that's very appealing when you're mm-hmm. first learning about music.
Ken, he did have a sort of everyman kind of quality. How did he get to become like a musical punching bag?
Well, first, I'd like to say that now that I've been automatically associated with American Psycho, my smackdown takes on added resonance, of course, in some way.
You're welcome.
I also have Eminem on my side, who has put down Phil Collins in.
Yeah, but Eminem's put down everybody.
In his song Stan. To me, Collins's move from progressive rock and Genesis to the pop schlock of his solo career demonstrates less an open mind than a kind of opportunism that's sometimes pretty egregious. And I think that overall, his career is kind of characterized by a kind of floridness and a mawkish kind of sentimentality that I have very little use for. I can understand why a song like You'll Be in My Heart can win an Oscar, because it's the big kind of overblown, sentimental, mawkish kind of song that does win Oscars.
Mm-hmm. What about, in this evolution, as you put it, from rock to schlock, where does an early song, an early solo song like In the Air Tonight fit?
I think that it's one of those very kind of catchy songs initially that also becomes insufferable very quickly and then devolves into the kind of parody that it became in the recent movie The Hangover, where Mike Tyson does the drum solo.
Was that parody or was that tribute? I think that's a fine line.
Yeah, well, I think that Collins, he has an undeniable knack for a catchy melody. The thing is that I don't think that the music holds up under any kind of oral kind of scrutiny. That kind of chalky voice, the mushiness of the lyrics when they're not hostile toward, an ex-wife or some unnamed person.
And there have been several of those.
We're not here to defend his personal life, luckily.
Right.
The thing is, I don't find him hateful. It's just that I find him banal.
30 years on, would you say, Andy, that the song In the Air Tonight has withstood the test of time?
I think absolutely. I think it's, I would say its use in The Hangover was more an example of its iconic status.
Let's hear a little bit from Phil Collins, 1981. Drummer, singer, songwriter Phil Collins. In the Air Tonight was from his first solo album, Face Value, released in 1981. That was 30 years ago. And Phil Collins has announced, as he has in the past, that he is retiring and that he means it this time. And we want to know, Soundcheck listeners, what's your reaction to Phil Collins' retirement? Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. Or leave a comment on the Soundcheck page, wnyc.org/soundcheck. You can also on the webpage find my own feelings on the matter in the Soundcheck blog. I will say this. I continue to marvel that In the Air Tonight became a hit in the first place when it is such an abstract, eerie, kind of unsettling song. It does not have hit tune written all over it.
No, it's a very strange and memorable song, and I think one of the more underrated aspects of Phil Collins' career is that first solo album, Face Value. I would take issue with something Ken said, where Phil Collins was a member of Genesis, certainly during their prog rock heyday, as the drummer, but he himself has never really had prog rock leanings. I think he's always been very true to himself, and the recording of this solo album, coming after his first of, I believe, three divorces, he produced this album that is incredibly intense and personal in a very interesting way. And it sort of, I think, presages a lot of the sort of confessional music that has come to fore these days.
Say that when you spend, two decades in a band that's essentially putting out progressive prog rock, art rock, and if you're not committed to that and your heart is really in pop, then you really should have done that somewhere along the lines of the two decades that you're in.
Would you say, Ken, that when Peter Gabriel left Genesis and Phil Collins took over the lead singing duties, would you say that Genesis began even as early as Trick of the Tail and Wind and Wuthering, those first records, beginning to get away from progressive and more towards popular sounds?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, certainly the lyric content of those songs, he had to deliver the kind of pretentious lyrics that Genesis put out. But, by the time you get to And Then There Were Three, which is the Genesis's only number one U.S. single with Invisible Touch, there's that definite move toward a kind of pop compromise within that band sound that he took and ran with.
And as Ken says, this was the band's only single to hit number one in this country. The title, the 1986 track called Invisible Touch.
Slowly take.
That is Genesis in a form that would have been unrecognizable to Genesis fans 10 years earlier.
It was fun. It's a good song. You know, it wasn't a 9-10 minute opus about English wheat. You know, I...
in 13, 14 time or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, exactly.
We're smacking around Phil Collins, who has announced his retirement from the music business. Hugely successful guy with many awards, big fan base, but also lots of haters. Ken Tucker's one of them, pop culture critic, editor at large for Entertainment Weekly, on the phone with us. Andy Greenwald here in the studio is a music journalist who has written for Entertainment Weekly and Spin and many others, and defending the Phil Collins songbook and the people who love it. Let's get a call on the line. Tim is joining us from Brooklyn. Tim, are you a Phil Collins fan?
Yes, I am, and I kind of want to advocate for him a little bit here. I think that he's got this kind of like was mentioned earlier. He's got this generally relatable music style that came about in the 80s that a lot of people can kind of really tag on to. And I kind of want to reference his performance at Live Aid in 84. I think for somebody to be able to sell so many records, you watch him there, here comes a stocky English guy who's balding, and he can play such amazing music, and it's so relatable to so many people. Right there, you just got to, you kind of got to give it up for him there.
Now, Live Aid, was that the one that in 85 where he flew on the Concorde?
Yes, and he was the only performer to play on both.
He'd played both concerts.
And he drummed for Led Zeppelin.
Right. So,
the same day.
He looked like an everyman, but he didn't act like one, I guess is the
point.
He
worked like one. He was a hard worker, which you got to admire, although that doesn't always translate as cool.
All right, well, let's see what some of our other listeners are saying on the Soundcheck webpage. And for comments, as usual, we head on into the control room and producer Joel Meyer. What you got, Joel?
John, just a few great lines from the Soundcheck page. Nick from the Upper West Side. Phil Collins is an extremely likable and intelligent guy who makes terrible records. Jim from New Jersey writes, I thought Phil Collins left the music industry 20 years ago. To that I say, hey-o. And Mark from Greenpoint writes this, I remember back in the 80s, a friend of mine suggested a drinking game where we would scan the radio dial, and every time we came across a Phil Collins song, you had to chug a beer. He was everywhere, John.
That would have been some very drunk people back in those days.
One thing that I noticed when... discussing Phil Collins with people before coming on the show is that generally every person I mentioned it to said immediately, oh, I love Phil Collins. And I would say, why? And they'd say, I don't know, good songs? Which is exactly the sort of casualness of fandom and of music appreciation that makes critical blood boil. But I think it's sort of hard to stand in the way of. I mean, it's true. It's possible sometimes to just like something.
I think it's more the idea that he summons up such feelings of nostalgia, and nostalgia is something I have very little use for. I think that the music has to kind of remain active and vital, and I think one of Collins's dubious contributions to American music is the power ballad.
What about the albums of Motown covers? What does that do for you?
I sought this out.
Wow, that sounds like...
knowing that we were going to be talking to this. His version of Heat Wave is one of the worst. It's lukewarm wave. It's one of the worst things I've ever heard. It's really...
Ken, you sound like you're in genuine pain. I'm sorry I brought it up.
I would like to say that it's very difficult to defend anything the man did post-1989. I feel like... I'd like to sort of see if we could move the debate a little bit closer to that 80s sweet spot.
I don't know about that. That seems a little unfair. Let's
How about his jazz fusion band, Brand X?
See, that's just mean.
Yeah.
All right, Mike from Brooklyn. I'm going to give you the last word, Mike. Which side of the fence are you on?
Oh, I'm definitely a big fan. And not necessarily for the music, but just because of his sheer pop genius. And I think if you look at the way he incorporated some electronics into his early solo recordings, of course, like your listener said, or rather your guest said, anything post-89, I definitely find a bit distasteful. But the early pop music is without question genius, whether one likes it or not. The textures and the production value and the musicianship is pretty sublime. And that would be my final comment.
He was a great drummer. I think a lot of people would agree to that. And a singer and a songwriter who really had a great success and leaves behind, if he is in fact leaving us, leaves behind quite a remarkable body of work that inspires, as you've heard, very strong opinions at very opposite ends of the spectrum. Ken Tucker, Unimpressed, editor-at-large for Entertainment Weekly. Andy Greenwald, who at least up to 1989 is willing to go all the way with Phil Collins, freelance music journalist, and here with me in the studio. Ken and Andy, thank you so much for smacking Phil Collins around for us this afternoon.
Thank you. Well, thanks very much.
Still to come, a performance from indie punk rockers Titus Andronicus. And don't forget to tune in this Friday when actor, comedian, and banjo player Steve Martin joins us to play live in the green space. Plus, comedian Mike Birbiglia gives us a sneak preview of his upcoming off-Broadway show with guitar in hand. Tickets are sold out for Friday's green space event, but you can watch a live webcast Friday at 2. Go to wnyc.org/thegreenspace.